Lady Shear, Chavis Halbobas, Shahar HaBitachon, Wednesday afternoon. It is Chaf Sivan, I believe. Yes, Chaf Sivan, Shahar HaBitachon will be starting in a few seconds. We're in the Psicha. The Psicha is telling us the necessity of Bitachon, and now we're learning about the benefits of Bitachon. Bitachon is not a prediction, it's not a magic wand, although according to Chavis Halbavitz's first reason, it is somewhat of a magic wand. It's a midah that we're mechuyev to have, we're obligated to have it, but more so, as I always love to say, it's really just a question of being in touch with reality. Once you believe in Hashem, and all of the ramifications of believing in Hashem, yes?
Never mind.
Did you ever watch Saturday Night Live? So there was a lady there that said, never mind. Remember that character? I forgot her name. But she would say something, then she would say, never mind. Not that I ever watched television after showing. But when I, as a rabbi, when I became a rabbi, I said, I have to really find out about everything. Bitachon is eminently logical. It's compellingly logical. Once you take that fatal step of believing in Hashem, and all of the ramifications of believing in Hashem, which is why Shar HaYichud is first. Because Hashem controls everything and decides everything, and everything that happens is a manifestation of His will. Once you've bought into that, which certainly everybody believes is a mitzvah, even if Bitachon isn't a mitzvah, but once you have your emunah in place, then Bitachon is compellingly logical, and you might as well develop it because it's just true, it's the reality. There is no one to rely on other than Hashem, because He is controlling everything, and nothing happens unless He wants it to happen, and nothing doesn't happen if He wants it to happen. As the Ramban says very famously, emunah is the fruit, is the tree, Bitachon is the fruit. So, but it's very hard to develop because this world, everything we see, everything we read, poison. Everything we read is poison. Even the so-called newspapers, from news, everything attributes everything that happens to cause and effect. Very little, yeah, they say Amitz Hashem, you know, they throw Hashem a bone, and they say Amitz Hashem, or Be'ezus Hashem, and they feel very frum. But really to have Bitachon is difficult because the world that Hashem created almost flies in the face of Bitachon. That's why I think I like to repeat that, once you have your emunah in place, it's compellingly logical. And it boils down to really, unfortunately, a chisaron and emunah. Not consciously, chas v'shalom, but Hashem is asleep at the switch. Hashem is not going to handle this problem for me. Hashem is busy with other things. Hashem is busy with the big things. He doesn't have time for little old me and my problems. So that's, as I say, it's compellingly logical. Although this is a workbook, like a workshop, teaching us how to develop it. And we're not going to start that workshop till we start Perek Aleph. Now he's extolling the benefits of it. And we're up to benefit number three. Benefit number one is, as we understood, the deeper meaning of the Chayvus Halvavus, because he's very, doesn't really explain himself. The superficial meaning of the Chayvus Halvavus in reason number one can't be true, we said, because he's giving spiritual benefits, and the superficial meaning of, and I've seen Meforshim, and I've seen books, and I've seen, they really misunderstand the Chayvus Halvavus. It can't be what it superficially means, because that's not a spiritual benefit. That's a physical benefit. That's a gashmiyistic benefit. So he definitely means, when he says that that's your best chance of attaining what you'd like to happen, he must mean the way the Ramban understands it. We explained this at length in the earlier Shirim, because you are living with Hashem, you become close to Hashem, and the more you're close to Hashem, the more he watches over you, and the more he takes care of you, and you're not subject to the vicissitudes of other hanhagos of his, which are more klali, which are more on the, you know, when the economy is bad, so 17% of, there'll be 6% unemployment. I think that's when it's good, I'm sorry. There'll be 6% unemployment. Now, the closer you are to Hashem, the less you're going to be a statistic. Not that a statistic is not directed from Hashem, but as I said, think of it as ripples in a pond, concentric circles. There could be a gzeira on a medina, there could be a gzeira on a town, there could be a gzeira on the economy of a country. And then if you don't have special schuyot, you're caught up, then you're caught up in that statistic. Nothing will ever happen to you unless you deserve it. But there's sort of passive deserving and active deserving. That's, yeah. Merits. That's if you behave. That's okay. So benefit number one, we'll say it the right way, is you're living with Hashem. That's an amazing spiritual benefit. Benefit number two, you live your own life. You're not beholden to others. You don't live with other people's values because of what they may do to you, because of a shidduch you may not get, because of a school your child may not get into, because of what people will say about you. You don't live other people's values. You live your own values. You're not afraid to speak up against evil, if the situation calls for it, of course, when appropriate, when obligatory. You're your own person. It's refreshing. You're independent. You feel it's liberating. Bitachon is liberating. That's benefit number two. Benefit number three is, it's an anti-stress pill. Except he will mention this. This is a spiritual benefit, and he will repeat it when he gives the list of physical benefits, because as any doctor will tell you, stress is one of the worst things for your health, is stress, and he will talk about that when he, in a physical benefit. But now he's talking a spiritual benefit. You're stress free, so you are able to devote yourself to whatever degree your life allows you to devote yourself to Avodas Hashem. You're not stressed about not having enough money, missing the phone call, how can I do this, but what's going to be with this, and how can I do that, what's going to be with that? You're calm. Everything's going to work out, Be'ezus Hashem. Everything, this is all, it's still vague in terms of practical life. The practicality of life we will learn when we go through the Shar, and he gives us the workbook of how to develop Bitachon. As an aside, the Chayvus Halavus himself, after teaching us in Perek 1, 2, and 3 how to develop Bitachon, devotes the fourth Perek to how to apply everything we learned in real life scenarios. And he goes through life. Can we help you? he goes through life, and he goes through relationships, and ups and downs, and friends, and family, and jobs, and he goes through just about every scenario in life you can imagine. This is in Perek 4. And he says, let's now, it's really a good workshop, let's now apply what we've learned in Perek 1, 2, and 3. That's Perek 4. So he himself, you know, he sees the need, so to speak, to practically apply things that we've learned that are theory till you actually apply them. So benefit number 3, yeah. By following the workbook, you will feel differently. You just explained the whole fifth parak. See, I told you the first four. The fifth is the name of the fifth parak is, I mean, I'm making up the name, obviously, the life of a Baal Bitachon and the life of a non-Baal Bitachon, because they have the same lives. And everybody's getting sick, Chas V'Shalom, and more people are walking through the Arab Shuk, and people are getting hired, and people are getting fired, and people are making money and losing money and not making ends meet, making ends meet. You look around, you say, ah. He says, you know, like, where's Waldo? The Chayz Avavis in the fifth parak says, where's the Baal Bitachon? You can spot a Baal Bitachon a mile away. Baal Bitachon has a smile on their face, they're creative, they're not afraid to try new things, they're in a good mood, they're optimistic, they don't snap at their, that the people that are around them, they're in a good mood. That's a Baal Bitachon. He gives seven differences. You know, we can't jump the gun. I'm sorry. That's in the fifth parak. He gives seven differences. And like, I'm always wondering, why did he write this parak for? And I want to thank you. Now I know the answer. Because of your question. Because we're always going to be pained when someone gets sick. And we're not going to dance a jig, even though ideally maybe we should. But nobody's dancing a jig when they get fired. No one's dancing a jig when they get sick. No one's dancing a jig this. So he's going to say, what is the difference between a Baal Bitachon and a not Baal Bitachon?
I understand that when things happen, you can get there to a common place and work on it. But we're
how you get there is not just sitting in this wonderful air-conditioned class and loving it, and then walking outside, and it's practicing the things we're going to learn. Now, you don't have to practice anything yet, because it really starts from Perek Aleph. If you want to do it like a child learning how to walk, then this is all an advertisement to entice you to come to the class, and the work starts in Perek Aleph. But, you know, it's inevitable that I'm going to talk about it and explain things. And the Chavis Haldovitz talks about Bitachon so much in the introduction, even though he's not doing anything with it yet. He's just talking about it and extolling it and saying how great it is. And all of these questions that you have are very, very valid questions, but, you know, I can't help it. Again, the Shaar HaBitachon is a workbook on how to develop Bitachon. It's primarily in Perakim 1, 2, and 3. Perek 4 is how to apply what we've learned in scenarios of life. Perek 5 is what's ultimately the difference between the Baal Bitachon and everybody. They're leading the same lives. Like, then there's Perek 6, and then there's Perek 7.
Okay, but we said earlier that the high likelihood is that a Baal Bitachon, the things will go the way he wants them.
Highest likelihood. Not high likelihood, because we don't know. He may want destructive things. And maybe Hashem has a lot of cheshbon. I'm just correcting you slightly.
Okay,
highest likelihood. Yeah.
If the Baal Bitachon things pretty much go his way, do we really have a test on him?
We don't know. No one has ever done a survey. There's a fella on the internet. I forget his name. If you Google Jewish psychology or something like that, you'll find him very quickly. He has done surveys on the emotional health of Baalei Bitachon, based on the Chayvus Halvados. and he has taken surveys, and he has, and that is called a scientific survey, where he asked specific questions, and he had a focus group, and a test group, and a this group, and a that group. I forget his name. I'm on his mailing. I forget his name. But no one has ever done a study, just like no one has ever done a study. Actually, in hospitals, they've done studies on the efficacy of prayer. And they do have higher statistics of recovery for people that pray. And they even have higher statistics for people that recover if other people pray for them, unbeknownst to the patient. So, but this, I don't know if anyone, again, I commissioned the study, we have, but this is an interesting, the mental health, because obviously it's extremely stress-free. But he has said, is this true? Is it true that the more bitachon you have in Hashem, the more mental, emotionally and mentally stable you'll be? And that's what this study is. And he sent out questionnaires and all sorts of things. Yeah.
What's the difference between bitachon and
bitachon
Hashem? That's the first one, just living with Hashem.
Bitachon is a word. But bitachon is a word. Right. In this class, 97% of the time when I say the word bitachon, I mean bitachon in Hashem. But the whole point is, you may have bitachon in a rich father-in-law. You may have bitachon in your boss.
You just might be a very person with a lot of bitachon.
Bitachon means to rely. I'm relying on my boss. I'm relying on my rich father. I'm relying on the Eged company that they want to send their buses on time. This is the point of that we made in the first benefit. You're always relying on something. Nobody lives in a vacuum. We have to rely on right now we have to rely on the electric company for light. We have to rely on the manufacturer of the light. We have to rely that Ari Stern set up the air conditioning system with the Shabbos clock, the air conditioning, the guy that installed the air conditioner. I mean, there's hundreds and hundreds of little reliances that we're doing. You have children? You're sitting here in the room. What's going on with your children? You're relying on the cheder, you're relying on the babysitter, right? So we have to train ourselves to say, yes, but I'm only relying on them as shaluchim, messengers and channels from Hashem. It's Hashem that's watching my children. It's Hashem that's getting the air conditioner to work. And this is It's hard. It is hard. But we have to train ourselves to do that, and that's what the others are trying to teach us. And again, Rabbi Milinowitz says, it's only recognizing reality. It's not a frumkeit. You know, frumkeit means what kind of meat do you buy, and how many hours do you wait after you eat meat, and how hard do you clap when you say, Slach lono vino kichotonu, that's frumkeit. But bitachon is not frumkeit. Bitachon is reality. Once you believe in Hashem and all of the ramifications, then of course I'm going to rely on Hashem. Like, to not rely on Hashem is, there's a famous, I don't know how famous it is, there's a quote from Ayn Rand, an apikursish Jew, of course. You ever hear of a famous philosopher? Not really, well, Ayn Rand. That's her most famous book, but she wrote an awful lot of books. There's a quote from her. You can ignore reality, but you can't ignore the consequences of ignoring reality. Okay? It applies to everything in this world. You can ignore reality if you want, but you can't ignore the consequences of ignoring reality. Okay. What are we learning? Ayn Rand, the Chesed Lovers. Okay. Number three is you're stress-free. And now the Chesed Lovers waxes eloquent. And he says, imagine the most stress-free person you can think of, and I will give you 10 ways in which the Baal Bitachon is more stress-free than that person. Because that person really is not as stress-free as you think. And he gives the alchemist as the example. Alchemist, they thought, can change any metal into silver or gold. So I call it a counterfeiter, if you think of paper money, or just someone with a limitless supply of money. So that's because most of our lives is consumed with making money. The Ezus Hashem, we shouldn't have health issues, but then most of the time, the health issues just become a question of money. Most of the time. Money, money, money. That's how Hashem made the world. We need money for everything we want. We need money. The best things in life are free. The Chavis HaLevavos always points out at the end of Shaar HaBechina that we didn't get up to. The air is free, except if you want to fill up on your tires, maybe they charge already. The Chavis HaLevavos says water is free. He never lived in the modern world. He says water is free, and air is free, and Torah is free. So the best things in life are free. Then the more we need something, the more Hashem made it available and free. That's in Shaar HaBechina. He says, isn't that interesting? What we need, the more we need something, the more available it is, and the cheaper it is, and the more we're able to get it. Okay. So he imagines that this person with a limitless supply of money, because he's a counterfeiter, no problem. He doesn't like the school his kid's in, he just builds another school. I mean, we're talking limitless. Right? Limitless. So he says, so what? He still has 10 problem areas. And he goes through. Number one was, we'll start the text at number 3 again. Number one was, he needs raw materials. He has to worry if there's going to be a port strike in Haifa to bring him the raw materials. So he has to worry about the wherewithal to produce what he needs. Or if you say a limitless supply, a counterfeiter, a limitless supply of money, but someone has to bring it to him. There's always something. It's not appearing magically at his doorstep. And when you have Tachin, Hashem covers everything. Hashem doesn't. Hashem provides with parnasa. He provides you with the job. He provides you with the job interview. He provides you with the clothing you need for the job interview. He provides you with the intelligence to make a good impression on the job interview. Everything's covered. There's nothing that's beyond his purview. Number two was that the alchemist, there's always unintended side effects, right? Whether it's in his case, he's talking about the alchemist, so there are fumes, chemical fumes, right? If we say, I have a great job, I'm calm, well, it's not true. You're stressed. You have to be afraid of losing it. You have to be afraid of how it's affecting your house. Right? Number two is really unintended side effects. There's always unintended consequences. But Hashem, there's no such thing as an unintended consequence. Okay, he's not promising us that life will always be what we call hunky-dory and not have any bumps in it. That's not his point. When you have B'tochen and Hashem and you are therefore stress-free, so you're not stress-free, but oh my God, what's going to be what's going to be with the fumes? What's going to be with the unintended side consequences? Hashem gave me a great job, but who will take care of my household? So there's no such, there's nothing outside the purview. So the alchemist has to worry about unintended side consequences, and the Baal B'tochen doesn't. We're up to number 3. And I'll start learning the text. Ki habal hakimiya, the alchemist, ain't no mammon al sodu zulasa. He's hush hush. He's afraid people will find out his formula and other people will do it. He's afraid of some, you know, you work, you're great at a job, and then some fresh kid out of college comes and the boss says, hey, what do I have to pay your salary for? You already have 16 years experience. Let me fire you and I'll hire this new person. Right? Now, a much cheaper salary. Right, you're afraid someone will learn to do what you are doing. He has to be worried about that. Again, but the Boteach is not afraid of that because Bitachon covers that also. There's nothing outside the purview. He just wants to hammer home the various stresses that the most stress-free person that you can imagine still has. Now, Boteach Belukim, enene yori mishimodem bibitchono. You're not afraid someone's going to find out about Rabbi Milinowitz's Bitochon class, and they're going to steal it from me. They're going to come, and they're going to learn the material, and I... I attend Rabbi Milinowitz's class. K'mo shomer dovel ha-melech ovel of ha-sholom, be-lokim batachti lo iro ma ya'aseh odom li. I'm untouchable. Hashem is going to cover everything. Varavi... Yeah? I'm sorry?
Coke. Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
It's a modern example of
Yeah. Baharavi, number four. Inventory. Inventory. The alchemist doesn't know if he should keep his money liquid or not. If he keeps his money liquid, it can get stolen from him. This is what he's stressed about. Don't think he's so stress-free. The richest person in the world has to decide how to invest his money, where to keep his money. Should he keep it under a mattress? Should he keep it in the bank? Should he keep it liquid? If he keeps it liquid, it can get stolen from him, or who knows what. If he doesn't keep it liquid, a great business opportunity is going to appear, and it's nogea today, but it's after 3 o'clock. Banks are closed. What's he going to do? He either piles up the money, the metal, the gold, the silver, because he may need it at any moment. Because he's afraid of it getting stolen from him. He'll be afraid that someone won't steal it or rob him. He's not really stress free. He's nervous that it'll get stolen from him. The Mas Hachnasah is going to find out about it. And if he says, okay, I'll do a little at a time, just enough to live for one day or for 1 week, Efshar, he's not going to have it when he needs it. This season, it's a slow season, it's a slow week, it's a fast week. Hashem is directing everything that happens to you. You're not... You do what you have to do. You have to do what we'll be calling hishtadlus, which means, obviously, you have to go with the seasons. If there's seasons when people... You don't want to sell an esrog in Tammuz, right? You don't want to sell an esrog. So you do what you got to do, but you're not nervous about, is it the right season? Is it the wrong season? Do I have too much inventory? Do I have too little inventory? Too much inventory? I have to lay out a lot of money and I have to store it. Where am I going to store it? Too little inventory. What do I do if I get a big order? I'm not going to be able to fill it. That's what he's talking about. So you're nervous. But Hashem is going to dole out what you need, when you need it. There's nothing beyond what Hashem is covering. When he wants to, where he wants to, Hashem takes care of. Right? There's nothing harder to take care of than the fetus in the womb. How does it eat? How do you get food in there? How does it get nourished? How does it breathe? Oh, Hashem could take care even of that. And we learned in Shar HaBechina how utterly amazing it is. Hashem can take care of that. Hashem will take care of your inventory. This is like Kasher Yatzer for Uba Berechemimo, Efroach Betoch HaBeitza. How do you get in there? How does the Efroach in the egg get nourished? Asher Ein B'Mokam Mefulosh. There's no hole in the egg. Nobody's injecting food into there. Likonet Eilu Mimenu Dover Michutzo V'Ha'ov Pa'aver V'Adogim B'Mayim. The ant, don't worry, Hashem has a game plan for every living thing. And a lion could go hungry. That's young lions. Roshu v'ro'evu. So again, if you learn the Sova yourself, you say, wait a second, I know somebody that's going hungry, and they're a big tzaddik. So, first of all, you don't know that they're a big tzaddik. Second of all, they're not going that hungry, because they're alive. Right? You know, they didn't starve to death. Well, maybe they don't have to be begging for bread. Maybe he likes them begging for bread. Maybe. We don't know. Again, this does not mean to... These psukim are not guarantees of... First of all, I'm saying it happens... It's the exception. The rare exception and not the rule. That's first of all. Second of all, we don't know who's a Baal Bitochen and who's not a Baal Bitochen. We don't know who's a tzaddik, who's not a tzaddik. If you were here for Shar Yichud HaMaisa, right, he gave a beautiful description of how the guy, the kid in the street with the spiked hair and the belly nose, the belly rings, might be a bigger tzaddik than the guy who's wearing a frock and shuckling away. You don't know what's going on inside of them. So, and third of all, and this is most important, first of all, the premise might even not be as true as you think. Second of all, he's not, we know there are no guarantees in life. We know that Hashem, v'lo niskenu alilos, means Hashem has that ultimate computer, and every piece of data goes in there, and everything is a cheshbon, and everything, and we don't know why things happen, and they might be wonderful. Someone came to me the other day, you know, a big tzora, maybe they're supposed to, a big tzora, maybe they're supposed to work on their patience. Maybe that's, and they conquer that midah. Then they go up to Shemayim and they found out that this thing happened to them so that they should conquer that midah. And then they're full of joy. And they say, then you say, thank you Hashem for sending me that problem, because I had this midah of anger, or I had this midah of lack of bitachon, or I had this midah of impatience, or I have this midah of, you know, being snappy, benod machavero, onoaz dvorim, and now I became more careful, I became a more sensitive person, I see what people go through, and all of a sudden I became more sensitive to people's feelings, and, you know, so in the, under the microscope of MS, it was worthwhile. Thank you, Hashem. Thank you, Hashem. I can't believe now I'm a better person for it. So there's no guarantees. His point is, once again, his point, so what's he saying it for? What does Dovah HaMelech say it for? He's quoting a pasuk in Tillim. It's true more often than not. If I say to you, I had this correspondence with someone in the class, if I say to you, the Jews had better lives in Golos than the Goyim did, you go, what? You have an inverted view of history, Rabbi. We were in Golos, there were pogroms, we were killed, we were exiled, we were persecuted, and the Goyim, they had a good time. Well, it's not true. If you study history, if you look at history, first of all, we're around, and most of them are not. So that's right away, we're ahead of the game. And second of all, the Jews always had a higher standard in living than the surrounding Goyim. V'afkam zos b'yosam b'eretz oyveyem lo'y ma'astem v'lo'y ga'altem l'chalosom lo'afer b'risi itom k'ni Hashem elokeyem. The Jews were always literate, intelligent, clean, much less diseases than the Goyim living. Always had a higher standard of living. You don't find in history that there were Jewish maids cleaning the living rooms at a Goyim. But you do find Polish maids that were cleaning, right? They always had, why? Wait a minute, we're in Golos, right? And they're the big shots. Why are we hiring them? They were always poor and downtrodden, came home drunk, beat their wives. Jews were always above. And that's in Golos. So you say Golos is a terrible experience. Golos happened for a reason, and it's a winnowing out, and it's a purification process, and it's not as big. Of course, we have the collective memory of the Holocaust right now, fresh. But how often do we think of the aftermath of the Holocaust? A standard of living that was never attained by any Jewish community ever in history, after Shlomo, you know, ever since we'll say Churban Bayis Sheni. Never. We're rich standard of living, unbelievable. Fertility, unbelievable, right? Health, Hashem is balancing things. I mean, I don't know, I'm not a Novi, and Hashem didn't check with me, and I'm not his accountant, but yes, we have the collective memory of the Holocaust, we have the collective memory of pogroms, but between the bumps, in general, it's a startling thing to hear, but in general, Jews always lived better than the surrounding Goyim when they were in Golos. So, there's no guarantees of anything, but the things we, you know, the Chavis HaLavah says in his Hakdama to Shar HaBechina that the reason it's so important to study and to practice Shar HaBechina is because we remember the bad things. We don't remember the good things. We don't think of the good things. I don't think right now that my kidneys are working and my spleen is working and my lungs are working and gravity is keeping things in place and there's a truck that's delivering, I don't know, I was in a Makolet this morning buying something and I see a package of macaroni and cheese. Like it's not in the refrigerator, like it's on the shelf in a bag and it's OU Chalav Yisrael. Macaroni and cheese. Look what you can have. We're so rich, we could have macaroni and cheese on a shelf. Anyway, so his point is, yes, the alchemist will be stressed about this, but the Baal Bitachon will not be stressed about this, because Hashem's omniscience and omnipotence and caring and chesed and love covers everything. He's just pinpointing 10 things, but it can boil down to, of course, the alchemist has what to be stressed about, and the Baal Bitachon is covered by Hashem, so that covers everything. Number 5, that the alchemist is afraid of Tabalakimio Tachasiro Bafachad. He's afraid of the authorities. He's afraid of the tax authorities. He's doing something either illegal or maybe it's suspected of being witchcraft. And, you know, they're always on top of you. The IRS or Mas Hakhnasa gets a hold of you with an audit. You're finished. They're going to squeeze you like anything. So you're afraid of that. You're afraid of an audit. Make believe you're saying that. Al malachto min agodol varakon sheba'om. And Abotech Belokim, he's walking around whistling a tune. People look at him. People are afraid of him. They say, what's this person's secret? Why are they in such a good mood? Maybe they're drunk. I don't know. Right? Let's admit it. We see someone that's always in a good mood, we suspect them of being on drugs. How dare you be in a good mood? How dare you be in a good mood? Don't you have any bills to pay? Oh yeah, they're foreclosing on me tomorrow. They're taking away my home. So why are you in a good mood? I have Hashem. It's all going to work out. Hashem's not going to abandon me. And you know something? As we'll learn, if he does abandon me, he's not abandoning me. It means it's good for me. So, like, how could I be upset? Like, what am I? Are you doing everything you're supposed to do? You have to check on that. Not because that's not in Hashem's purview, chas v'shalom, but because that's unacceptable behavior to Hashem. It's an aveira. We don't think of it as an aveira because it's not listed in the 365 aveiras, but not doing hishtablus is a violation of Hashem's will, and is thus you can call it an aveira. Why not? It's a violation of Hashem's will, so you're going to have consequences if you don't do basic hishtablus. Okay, so that's number 5, that you're afraid of Mas Hakhnasa, and the Baal Bitachon, people are afraid of him. People say, "What's this guy's secret?" Af Hachayus V'Havonim, very interesting. He says, he has good karma. Even animals and nature want to be in consonant. They want to help him. They want to serve him. Again, because he's walking around with Hashem. So what does that mean in the real world? I mean, you know, that's good for Yaakov Avinu. You know, he had the stones. They wanted Alayoniach HaTzadik Al Rosho. What does it mean to us? It means you're in consonance. You're in consonance with nature. You're in consonance with the world. That's karma. You have good karma when you have bitachon. You're with Hashem, and Hashem's running the world. So you're not fighting the world. You're flowing with the world. You're flowing with Hashem's will. Yeah, that's the best way of describing it. You're flowing with Hashem's will. Sounds a little hippie-ish, but that's good. K'moshe nemar b'mizvah yoshev b'seisiv eldeo na'nachriso v'omer b'sheish soros yatzilcho b'shev v'ligach b'ra b'ra p'otcham imovis atzof inyan. Vashishi number 6. Very obviously, the alchemist, nothing to do with health. He's still going to be worried. He's going to go for his physical. He's going to be nervous. He's got a heart attack, chas v'shalom, and this and that. Hashem is health also. Hashem is not just money. Hashem is health. Vashishi shemalakim yana betuch meachaloyim ba'amadim. He has to be worried about being sick. Shema'arvin olav simchosabosh, or you could be very, very rich. All you need is one ulcer and you're eating cottage cheese and grapefruit. Doesn't matter how rich you are, right? You're eating saltines, my grandmother used to eat, you know. Little saltines crackers. That's it, you know. You know, a rich person. Can I have a little piece of herring? Please, no! You can't have herring. What are you, nuts? Eat herring? You'll be sick in bed for the next 2 weeks to eat that piece of herring. He sneaks it when no one's looking. But that's the point, is it doesn't help to be rich when you don't have your health. And he can't enjoy his wealth if he's not doing well. Right? The doctor said, you want to kill yourself, you continue to eat this food. But if you want to be healthy, you want to be around to enjoy your money, then you're going to have to, like I say, eat cottage cheese and saltines. But apoteach b'Hashem, batuach min amadvin v'chaloyim, again, does that mean a Baal Bitochon will never get sick? First of all, we don't know the answer. We don't know the answer. But we do know that the Baal Bitochon, if they get sick, there's a specific cheshbon for it. It's not because he's a statistic, but there's a reason. And also, in general, he won't get sick. Taka. El al derech hakapora. Yeah, he may get sick as a kapora, and when he ultimately sees the final accounting, someone just had a very unpleasant experience in life. So I said, first of all, I'm not a Novi, I'm not Hashem's accountant. I don't know. But, you know, what are you going to do with 17 years ago, on a Wednesday afternoon, you did something, and I mentioned a certain Avera, that happens, that could happen every day to all of us, and Chazal say, Ein lo chelek olam haba, if you do that. And, you know, when he was 22 and a half, he did it on a Monday afternoon. And he lost, you know, and it's a thing that's described in Pirkei Avos. And this is now a kapara, and he's getting his olam haba now. So he's not going to dance a jig and say, thank you Hashem for that this terrible thing happened to me? I said, I don't know, I'm not accusing him of anything. But you're accusing Hashem of something. That's okay to do. I can't accuse you of something, but I can accuse Hashem. You can accuse Hashem? It might be a kapara, or al derech hatamura, kamosha kosa v'yor, nof v'yigo, v'achorim koshol yikashelo. I'm going quickly through the psukah, I'm not explaining them. V'omar b'kol v'yishem yechli v'koach, v'omar ki yizro s'shom t'shivayna v'somech tzadikim Hashem. If he's sick, there's a specific... First of all, he is generally healthy. A good person that's healthy. Remember, the Baal Bitochon is leading a healthy lifestyle just mitzad the physical shebo, because he's not eating to excess, he's not working to excess. He's doing, you know, just enough what he's supposed to do, his ishtadlus. So he will be much, much healthier than other people. And if something happens, there's a cheshev. The point is, you're not stressed about it. That's his point he's making. You're not nervous about it. And if it happens, you know it's from Hashem. That will save you from it happening. And if it does happen, you will know there's a specific cheshbon for it. If you don't have emunah, you cannot have bitachon. I'll tell you that now. If you're not firm in emunah, the tree, bitachon is the fruit. If you don't have firm emunah, nothing's going to help. And if you do have firm emunah, I'll say it again. Bitochon is just a natural, common sense piece of logic. Vashvi. Food. You know, if there's no food, you could starve to death. All the money in the world is not going to help you. Shabbal akimi yefshish le'agiel mazono. B'meshe yesh ben azov akesel. Look what happened. Be made by Yesheni. Right, the rich Miriam Baisus of Azunin had all that money, and she kept sending her servant to the shuk, and there was less and less food available. World War II, what people wouldn't have done for a piece of bread? What was all their money? What good? So the alchemist still has that stress that he has to get food. It's not enough to have money. Maybe it'll be a drought. There won't be enough water. There won't be enough food. Right? All you need is 2 days of trucks not delivering. You think, oh, nowadays we're not farmers. We have all the food we want. Just watch the panic if there's something the trucks can't deliver for 2 days because there's no gas. People panic. From the perspective of his bitachon, there's no more problem. It's not more difficult. Bashmini. This is going to be hard to hear. Also, the Malachimia. The Chavis Halavas here and in other places extols the virtue of not always being on the move, of not having to travel a lot to go to your place of work. It's a value by him not having to move every 3 years, every 4 years. You have a settled place. He feels it's healthy physically, emotionally. It's a healthy way to live. He mentioned it, it's like very interesting. He mentioned it a few places in the Sefer. He talks about the negative effects of always having to be on the move, not being settled. Sometimes it's in terms of where you live, sometimes it's in terms of a job. The job makes you move. So he says the alchemist is always on the move. Again, he's afraid of people sneaking into his house, right? The Rishon don't sleep in the same place. Arafat, you can't say Yimach Shmo anymore. Maybe you could, I don't know. Arafat, Yimach Shmo, I never slept in the same place 2 nights in a row. He's afraid. The alchemist has to always move. He's afraid after a year people are going to find out about him. He'll be careless. People will talk about him. How does this guy have so much money? He doesn't seem to be doing anything useful. He's always on the move. And the Baal be. Does that mean all the people that work in America and travel to America don't have bitachon? So again, the first answer is, I don't know, maybe it does. That's a difficult question to answer. I would have to personally interview each one. Are they doing normal hishtadlus? Nowadays, obviously, what the Chavis Halavos saw as some. On one hand, it's much easier to travel. It might not be what it was. On the other hand, it takes a toll on the family. It takes a toll on the children. It's not pashut, you know. So I'm not, obviously, not being dan, not judging, or not the people that do it. But you have to know how that fits in with bitachon. What does it mean? Maybe the person says, I see this as a way to work for 2 weeks and then to learn for 2 weeks and not have to work at all. So that's the way I want to live my life. I don't look at that as a b'di'evin. And if I wouldn't travel, I would work here. I'd be working from morning to night. That's not a chisaron bitachon. That's saying the marketplace here, the norm. I can say I have bitachon that I'll find a job here that I can work for 2 weeks and make a lot of money and not do anything for 2 weeks. That's not hishtadlus to say that. In Israel, that doesn't make any sense. It's not true. It doesn't exist. So maybe that's their cheshbon. I'm not judging anybody. I'm just saying, although this is world, it's not a good thing if you have to go traveling. But now, Baruch Hashem, why do you think Hashem made computers for? When I was contemplating moving to Israel. This is so funny. I am old, by the way. When I was contemplating moving to Israel, it was a fax machine was still a chiddush. It was still a chiddush, and I was dealing with art scroll. And I can move. I can't move. Okay, you'll have to come back at the end of every volume. Blah blah blah. And, okay, you'll have a fax machine. You'll just fax it in. Like it's a joke. Now everything's scanned and everything is a couple of keys on the computer. It's a different world than when I moved to Israel 16 years ago. And now it's like a joke if you talk about where you're living. You could be living anywhere. You could be living on the moon. All right. And work for Odd Scroll. Okay. Okay. We'll continue, Mr. Sun, next week.